Hello, everyone. Very nice to see you. And Gail, that was just incredible. As I was listening to it, I'm saying, how are you going to follow that? But I'm going to give it a go. I'm going to read mainly from All That Jazz, but I'm also going to read a poem from each of the first two collections, because one of the themes that I kind of write about a lot, which isn't in this book at all, actually, is kind of my vegan and animal rights advocacy. So I've a number of poems, I have a section in the middle of both of these books that kind of deal with our kind of bizarre and exploitative and abusive and contradictory and all those kind of words relationship that we have with animals. So I'm just going to read two short poems. It's lovely to be here, by the way, and thanks for the invite, Paul. This one is called, it's actually one of the first poems I wrote about the subject when I moved down to Roscommon. It's called 0032. Across a ragged fence, like windblown lace, your silk soft ears wave bright yellow tags. Nice to meet you, 0032. You have a freshness about you, unlike your elders, long settled in their lazy, languid lives. Though your shorn horns and your absent testicles, a truffle treat perhaps for the hungry farm dogs, testify to an early trauma somewhere in these wet bogs. Daft calf, with your ridiculous ears, you stand stubbornly against the improbability of human love. Go now to your mother. Go to her, sweet calf, while you still can. And then this is from In the Space Between. Again, there's a number of poems in the middle. And there's actually, you're all missing it tonight, and so am I. There's an RTE Investigate program on tonight that got a lot of advanced publicity, and it's an expose that RTE have carried out on the dairy industry. And so I'll be watching that in the morning. This one is called Cargo, and you'd be all familiar with this particular scene, I think. We're in the slipstream of your fear, a fear that fouls the wind tunnel of these high hedges shadowing mean northern roads. We shut the windows. The stench would turn a cast iron gut. Worse, the sleeping child will wake with questions we cannot answer. Your journey has just begun across endless motorways and seas that dip and rise to the camouflaged slaughterhouses of Cairo and Metz and Gdansk. There will be the usual welcoming party as you stumble down the ramp, a greeting undreamed of as you grazed the soft meadows over dark northern bogs. So that's those. Thank you very much. So this collection came out in October, November of last year. And I had picked a collection of poems to read. And I've decided now that I'm just going to kind of read from the beginning and go through, because as I'm sure you know, you spend a lot of time figuring out the running order of a book, and it changes all of the time. So there was a reason I put these together. It won't become obvious to you as I'm reading them, but it just makes sense to me to start at the beginning and just work my way through some of them. And I better put the timer on. Okay. This one is called The Dog, the Accordion and the Stars. And I have it in memory of Dermot Healy, who I'm a great admirer of, and who did an extraordinary generous act, who wrote a beautiful blurb for the back of this first book, which I didn't even know him at the time. And it was typical of his generosity as a writer, because he was so busy doing other things, but he spent a lot of his time working with community groups and helping other writers. And he wrote a beautiful piece. Anyway, so I got to know him a little bit. The place names in it are place names from where he grew up and also where he was living at the time that he died. And it's called The Dog, the Accordion and the Stars. The dog whines. She doesn't understand what has come over me now that I've been outside and back in. She cannot see the stars I have brought with me into the small room. She beats her tail on the linoleum. Jackie Daly's accordion keeps time. When I close my eyes, I can follow the road from Ballyconnell to Fanay by the stars in my head. They are my guide to wherever I choose to go. The accordion tilts the moon back to Sheelan and Canale. The dog's tail goes still. Most of my poems are short. I've only ever written a long poem, which is 77 lines, which isn't that very long. So they're all fairly short, so I'll be reading quite a few. This is called The Poem on the Blackbird. There is a reason I sit here just after dawn, a pen in my hand, the blank page waiting for my elusive inner world to reveal itself in an unexpected phrase or a startling, remarkable thought. Like the one that comes to me now, a thought so profound, it causes me to leave down my pen, walk to the door and open it, listen to what the blackbird has to say this early March morning. This is called 14 Oyster Catchers. I live near the western seaboard, so I frequently go to Streeta Beach, north of Sligo, Ross's Point, which I'm sure a lot of you know, and also Strand Hill. This is Streeta. It's called 14 Oyster Catchers. He drove to Streeta Strand, thought he might get a poem out of it. The winter morning, wet and misty, ideal for composing. He met a man who talked and could not stop. A poem was out of the question. Keeping up with the monologue was a job in itself. And so he walked and listened and nodded. And as one long, rambling tale moved seamlessly onto the next, he watched 14 oyster catchers take to the air and fly into the mist. This is called Ross's Point. Ross's Point is where we go when the earth has turned and winter weakens its grip. Once more, we fool ourselves that all will be fine. The beach's gentle curve, terns clustered on the shoreline, a cormorant skimming the flat sea, and there, rising as one to the dog's bark, a flock of geese above the brine. We step upon the damp sand. The air, already clearing winter's congestion, feels soft on our cheeks, like the gentle caress of a mother's hand or the touch of a god we've barely known. Moving into relationship territory, it's definitely my most personal book to date, and there probably won't be another one like it. So we'll move into that territory now. This is called Lycidel. That was an odd sort of summer. Hard to remember now what we did, how we put in the time. There was a visit to Lycidel, I remember that, the two of us basking in the sun in the courtyard, drinking coffee, sharing intimacies, in our early days testing of the waters. You took out your phone, showed me photos of your family, a mother, a brother, two sisters. I gave you a potted history of mine, your eyes widening with each new sibling. You said you couldn't wait to meet them. That was the week of the sun, when it felt as if the summer was only just beginning, and we set sail into a clear blue sky. This is called The Day After the Rain, and it's, you wouldn't know this, but it's set in the town of Boyle, where I live close to. The day after the rain, and a dense grey quilt hangs over the sullen Connaught town. The river is in a frenzy. It cascades under the old stone bridge, ferries odd tokens from the uplands. This, for instance, a battered handbag snagged on the bough of a snapped alder, its precious contents long gone, except for one trapped gem, a gleaming pearl polished by the currents, winking at the riverbank. A memento of a moment in time before it all turned sour, when expectations were high, when hope was in the ascendant, when things, against the odds, were looking up. This is a poem called Meeting You Again. You are driving home now, after our brief encounter on a busy street, back across the country, to your husband, to your children. And I'm remembering the first time we met in that old drawing room, how you stood on the carpet in your yellow cotton dress, your arms touching your sides, your unblinking, blue, amazed eyes, while I jabbered on. And what I liked was the way you were no one else but you. I guess I fell in love with you then, which happens. It happens all the time. Mostly, there is no place or space for this tiny seed of love to grow, and so it dies before it can bloom. Ours was this kind of love. We met, we leaned in, we thought we might, we leaned away again. You are driving home now, leaving us both a little stunned by what has happened, though mostly by what did not. I didn't see the funny side, but I do see it now. I do see the funny side of it. Moving on to Six Swans. This is Carrick and Shannon based. Again, you wouldn't know that, but six swans are flying low over Market Yard, honking like long-distance lorries, waking me from my stupor from the dense fog of battle in my head. I have left you where I last saw you, a little bewildered, I suspect, in the wake of my silence, my out-of-the-blue darkness. From nowhere it came, and like a stray dog it has retreated. The six low-flying swans crossed the Shannon at Ging's pub, announcing their passage, their enormous wings batting down the air, their sonorous honks an ancient tonic. I am on my way back to where I abandoned you, to tell you about the swans, how six of them flew over Market Yard, how sorry I am that you did not see them. Remembering Palermo. I was in Palermo once, in a room like this. Each time, after our lovemaking, I would stand at the window and wonder how we would be when we returned to Taormina, the tourists, the souvenir shops, the less than authentic. Everything appeared authentic when we were in Palermo. Even our love, which seemed fragile elsewhere, felt more real there. The breeze would blow the curtains into the room. The smoke from your cigarette would enter my lungs. And I would call to you to come, and you always did when we were in Palermo. Stop laughing, you.
I'm sorry.
I know, I'm only joking. You need it. Yeah, I'm sorry. Actually, at some of the readings, I was looking for something cheerful in the book, and there's nothing cheerful in the book. That's good. I'm glad there's a funny side of it. It's great. This is called Had I Been Listening. Had I been listening, I would have heard the door closing, the small brass key turning the lock, your soft retreating steps on the wet gravel. I would have raised my head from the warm hollow of my pillow, heard the creak of the old double bed as I rose. I would have stepped into the moonlit night, carried you gently to our room, placed your head back on your pillow. It's simple, really. I should have been listening. I should have been paying attention. This is called Murphy's Law. I've been putting off writing this poem, especially here in this cafe where an awkward encounter seems inevitable. I will be here and you will enter, or I will enter and you will be here. It is a small world everywhere now. Down here in this watery town, it is smaller still, a chance encounter unavoidable, with me rambling these parts incessantly, restless as always. If I write the poem, if I finally get the damn thing written, Murphy's Law will be enacted for sure, with you walking in the door just as I'm closing it one last final time. I hope I'm not depressing you too much. It's a long time ago. I'm out the other side of it. This is called letting go. How the years have passed since you first walked away from me on a busy street and I followed you, keeping the back of your head in sight as the distance between us became greater until I lost you completely. I think of you often, my love, yet I also know this, that even as I followed, we were letting go. We're already walking away, though we had many miles to travel together. This is called stupid. When I looked around, there was only me, and for a long time I would not accept that you were not there to hold my hand through thick and thin and all the rest of the shit that gets thrown by people you thought you could trust. I'd have to see this through alone, the journey into oblivion, my left hand clasping around my right and not yours, as I had counted on stupidly. Spinning. She was his center of gravity. So when she finally left, he had nothing to keep him grounded, only the memory of when they'd been together. But memories alone were not enough to prevent an unraveling, which was slow at first, before picking up speed like a Hadron Collider. By the end, he was spinning like a spinning top, spinning right off the face of the earth. She went into the healing business and may return in some enlightened future. By then, he will be in another galaxy, beyond search and rescue, a million light years beyond healing. That's how I felt at the time. How are we doing for time, Paul? Are we all? Oh, yeah. Okay. I won't read the long one. That would kill you all together. Okay, moving away from this. This is a different kind of poem. This is called Connections. Just to explain, a lot of these poems go back a long way. So this poem was hanging around for a long, long time. It dates back to that heavy snows of 2010, 2009, 10. That's when the original part, and I couldn't finish it until I got it finished. Well, it wouldn't be in here if I didn't believe I got it finished. You're the judge of that, I suppose. It's called Connections. On a long, lonely road, I meet a man outcropping. Farmer's wellies, an old winter coat, his daily kale, cabbage, sprouts. We talk about his crop and, of course, the weather. Always the weather and the latest to die an easy or a tragic death. Not the icebreaker we need, but it keeps us going, keeps us connected. We are two low-impact humans treading lightly on the earth, understanding what makes a day bearable. Homegrown greens just picked, a ride on a bicycle in the snow, a neighborly chat, a chance to laugh. Our voices reclaim the past, broad consonants settle in the snow, hard syllables echo back at us before rushing like frightened animals across the white meadows. Again, this is a poem that I spent a long time at, even though there's only six lines in it. And I thought I'd never get it done. But anyway, I think it's only one of two poems that are rhyming in the book. And it's called On My 10th Birthday. And it's kind of me and kind of made up me as well, in the pursuit of getting a poem written. On my 10th birthday, I'm the golden apple of my father's eye. I'm crying again. And I don't know why. I'm my sister's gentle and tender brother. I'm too fragile for this world, says my mother. I'm sunshine and sweetness and light. I'm invisible all day and all night. Thank you. Sometimes, in fact, maybe a lot of the time, the short ones are the best. I'll just read two more. Two short ones. This one is called Those Wives. Time speeds up the older you get, said those old wives who had no watches. Those wives knew a thing or two, and not just about runaway time. They knew how to raise a dozen children, how to run a tight ship, how to steer a course through the moods of the men they married. I could have done with a wife like that. She might have softened my edges, Help me live a less rigid life. All my life I've been making lists, January plans mapping out my future, daily to-dos to keep the engine running. Now might be a good time to slow this vintage model down, take the foot off the pedal, relax into the downhill slide. And I'll finish with, I'm not sure what I'm finishing with. I'll finish with this one, again, it's a short one. And again, it's about writing, I suppose. And it's called This Foolishness. It's just five lines. But it looks nice on the page because each each line is longer than the other. Anyway, this foolishness. Sometimes the penny drops and all I can do to keep me sane is stop this foolishness, put down the pen, shrug on a coat, and walk through the meadow and into the woods where the trees stand waiting always. Thank you very much. Thank you.